Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Today's show is on compassion, and it was an interesting selection. I've asked Susan Mitchell if she would talk with me about compassion, and I had a couple of reasons, and as we know, reasons are kind of made-up things so that we do what we do, but... So one of my made-up things was that I know that she has a Buddhist practice, and that for me, I mean, this may be my own, how should I say, stereotype, that for me, the practice of Buddhism really comes, or at the heart of this practice is a quality that we know as compassion. And I'm really interested to see what she'll say about that. And also, we've been having this interesting and very sort of heartfelt discussion about elderly parents and, you know, when is it that we need to let go of our expectations of taking care of them as being being children and wanting to be caring and devoted, and also to balance the scale in some way of knowing that our parents took care of us when we were children and brought us up and so on. And no matter what our judgment is of how we were treated or cared for, that there's a circle that is formed, and the completion of that circle, there's always these questions about, well, what's the best care, and what is the best I can do, and so on, which calls for, in my book, a lot of compassion for everyone involved. And now, this is January the 10th, and this weekend, on the 8th of January, a woman here in Tucson, which is just down the road from me, a congresswoman was shot, and she's not dead. She's critically injured. And there were six other people, though, including a child, who were killed during the shooting. And several other people were wounded. And the whole of Tucson is a bit shocked right now. There's a lot of rhetoric about gun laws and so on, but, you know, I feel personally that this, as with everything, started, you know, many years ago, maybe generations ago, and comes to the point where it's a little bit like the question that we were asking about our parents. You know, in our governmental systems and in our way that we want to live together, how can we be compassionate, understanding, respectful, honorable, and still live together in a way that seems, I don't know how to say it, seems compassionate in some way, that seems like we can be with each other, and we can feel for each other, and we can, as somebody very wise once said, that we can treat each other as we would like to be treated. And I think that this has come to be our burning question in our modern age, and especially this next week in the United States. So compassion is our word for the day, an investigation that I feel like we all come to in our Reiki practice. And it's definitely not a question or not a discussion that will have definitive answers, but certainly the exploration is very interesting, and I think you will enjoy and be touched by Susan Mitchell and her way of being. So, Susan, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Well, you're welcome, Phyllis. Intriguing to me, you know, kind of the threads that you picked up, you know, compassion in relationship to our Reiki practice. in relationship to our aging parents. And then, you know, this whole situation that's happened in Tucson this last week, and this need for compassion, which does seem like it's so critical today. In thinking about, you know, this shooting that happened in Tucson, I had an email yesterday from some progressive organization wanting to have its members sign a petition to Sarah Palin about, you know, not using violent rhetoric. And, you know, I really stopped and thought about that email and just this, you know, this question you raise about how can we be with each other. And so, I don't know, you know, I had this feeling of sort of like turning up the decibels and screaming, and it just didn't feel like the right solution.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, I mean, it just seems really timely. And as I was thinking about our conversation today, I of course did go to the dictionary to look up the word compassion, and I didn't like the dictionary definition really at all. I was kind of appalled because the first thing they talked about was pity. And, you know, I that's not part of my picture of compassion at all, because pity seems like it really puts people at a distance, you know, and puts their pain at a distance. And I feel it has, you know, everything to do with what you said of how do we really be with one another. And a lot of that being with has to do with how do we hold pain and, you know, the problems that come to us as being human, and the points, you know, of intense suffering. So my definition, and... and this is not my, I didn't write this definition, but this really is a Buddhist definition, is that compassion is a wish for all beings to be free from suffering. And then it has this action part, which is to do whatever I can to bring that about.
Mm-hmm.
So... you know, as I talk about compassion, that's the perspective that I'm talking from. And...
Right. Can I jump in here?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, you know, it's very interesting. I want to just go back to the dictionary. I'm disappointed in my dictionary these days because when I used to go to my dictionary, I used to... In the early days, I used to be very inspired sometimes by learning the origin of the word or finding out the different meanings that I had that weren't the same as the dictionary and so on. And recently, I've been disappointed because I feel like the way that I use words are really different than the dictionary. So I don't know if somebody's rewritten the dictionary lately and just... gone off the deep track, or if, which is probably not true, but is, you know, this word compassion for me always has been translated in my mind to mean with feeling, and it's a kind of psychological perspective, I guess, of this word compassion, and it, for me, it meant not just my emotions, but my feelings as a human being, and that what keeps us together as human beings, what keeps us connected as human beings, is to keep connected to our feelings, because that's the place where we are really one. And I just see, as I said in my radio show last week, that sort of the opposite of love for me is disconnection, is separation. And, you know, if we can stay connected, then somehow there's a place of needing to get really good at compassion, because
yes.
if we have separation as our priority, then we shut down the feelings. We shut down our own feelings, which is not good, because you can't really turn them off and on like a light switch. That's my experience, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel, too, that compassion is really based on love.
Mm-hmm.
And that desire to want to be open to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Not to take on their pain, but to really be present.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I also, you know, in looking at this whole theme of compassion, I realize how limited, you know, my capacity is. And, I mean, growing, I hope growing and growing, but you know, in a way, it's really an aspiration to become more and more compassionate, and realize it's baby steps. So, you know, one of the things that I feel is that, you know, Reiki is really one form of compassion in action. I feel so, like, fortunate in that regard that this has become, if I could say, my life, you know? I mean, it's treating people gives me the opportunity over and over to be called to touch people with from that kind of place, you know, that place of love and the desire to be present to whatever pain or struggle or challenge or even, you know, really kind of core suffering that might be going on for somebody in a given situation.
Mm-hmm.
I feel called, you know, by Reiki to develop my own compassion. And it's always, you know, because it's my work, it's always like set there right in front of me.
So that
feels like a real blessing.
That brings up two questions for me. One is, can you say something about what you mean by love? That's the first question.
Sure. So I'm going to go, you know, for a Buddhist definition.
Okay.
Which is not romantic love, although one would certainly hope the deeper form of love is a part of any romantic love. But that it's the wish for all beings to be happy. So when you put these two together, love and compassion, love is that wish for beings to be happy, and compassion is the wish for them not to suffer, with that extra piece of, and, you know, I will do what I can to bring that about.
So does that feel similar to just for today, do not anger?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'll just respond to that this way.
Okay, good. I mean, it was a question that came out of the blue, but it's an interesting question.
Yeah. So what I think, I mean, the way I look at it,
right,
is that the principles can really be very pointed supports for achieving a compassionate mind.
Right.
And so for me, the first two, also a loving mind.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it seems like the first two point out, you know, what not to do. Just for today, do not anger, do not worry. You know, I see how both anger and worry shut my heart down.
Uh-huh.
And they create disconnection. They also really, in that shutting my heart down, closes my field for relationship because I'm so focused on myself. You know, what I want, what I don't want, what I'm not getting. I see that manifest in my own life with fairly petty things.
Uh-huh. Like
you know,
what?
That, like Paul, my husband, you know, doesn't put his dishes in the dishwasher. Or, you know, my son, who was just recently home for the Christmas break, you know, doesn't wipe up the shower when he's done.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and I'll just see this little sort of spurt of irritation, yeah?
Yeah.
And, well, I think it's important to say, you know, it's not that I have to be a doormat and just accept everything everybody does and, you know, smile and be nice.
Oh, that's a relief.
Yeah, I think it's important to say.
Good. Well, I'm not kind of a doormat kind of person, but if I had to aspire to that, that'd be a bummer.
But I also see that, you know, anger does that heart-closing thing.
Uh-huh.
And so to talk about a problem, a disagreement, you know, a whatever,
uh-huh,
is useful,
uh-huh,
can take us to a place where people's needs get met.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the anger doesn't really do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like it closes the door,
mm-hmm,
and cuts me off, isolates me. It doesn't make me happy.
Right.
And I think, you know, you can't be angry and compassionate at the same time. They're mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to work toward the compassion side rather than the other side.
Right.
And, you know, and I feel like worry, you know, anxiousness, I mean, that's the same kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
That closes the doors.
Uh-huh.
And I don't see any way in which that helps, any way it helps me to really connect in a way that's not neurotic.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's how I look at those first two principles in relationship to love and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the others, I think, as I deepen in my respect and capacity to honor other people, as I'm more, you know, mindful, more honest, as the capacity for gratitude expands,
mm-hmm,
you know, those are like the positive movements toward, or they support the positive movement of my mind and my actions,
uh-huh,
toward compassion and love.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And what always intrigues me is how the principles really, you know, support my practice.
Uh-huh.
And the practice really supports the development of the principles in my own mind and heart. You know, it never matters what sort of topic I go to look at. But I always see that dynamic, that inner relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking after I asked the question that it's an odd thing I think about human beings that I suppose I feel like I'm a typical human being. And so that's a critical assumption.
So, and I'm going to say ditto.
Ditto, okay. So as a typical human being, I find it easier to be angry than compassionate. And it's a fascinating thing for me, I guess, because, you know, vulnerability is one of those things that, you know, is a kind of survival mechanism process. And a lot of times anger is a way to survive some time that I feel vulnerable by pushing away and by separation and so on. And so I think that for me, the principles address what comes readily to me. And then... And then once I can, you know, kind of get a handle on anger is not about the other person, it's about me.
Uh-huh.
Once I really get that together, then I have the capacity to move on to another step, which is, well, you know, if I'm not going to be angry with them, then what's next? And what comes in for me is compassion. Like,
yeah.
It was very interesting. I was, this weekend, I was with a group of Reiki masters, and we were just outside of Tucson, and actually many of these people were actually from Tucson, and a couple of the members of the group actually knew Gabriel Giffords, and they were extremely shocked and devastated by this, and the first... And how it happened within our circle, we were coming together and being together, and one of the members is
Universal Peace?
Yeah, Dances of Universal Peace, sorry.
Uh-huh.
And we had scheduled to do dances just after lunch, and it was at lunch that we found out that this had happened. So we continued our little program, and we went out for an hour and danced in the sun. And she was very sensitive and chose some beautiful dances. And, you know, it was interesting to see the anger change to compassion just in that. And our being together and our being conscious together in being in Reiki and sending, well, I don't know about sending, it's not quite the right word, but in being in Reiki and holding the situation in Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And that felt really like it transformed the process. It didn't transform the pain in the sense that it was still painful and it was still sad and we still cried and all of that, but it was... was a time of really introspection and to see that change from anger to compassion and then with this one gentleman back to anger and compassion, and you know, it kept going back and forth.
Right.
So in one moment he wanted to take a gun and kill this guy, and the next moment he was, you know, willing to forgive him and, you know, see that he had a terrible life and that, you know, the government didn't support him or whatever his story was.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter whether it was true. It was his story, you know, and being able to be compassionate about that.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting weekend because we ended up feeling intensely connected to each other.
Uh-huh.
And that was sort of the opposite of the energy that felt like that was demonstrated in Tucson.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting, isn't it, this piece about how, in some ways, how easily the mind moves back and forth.
Uh-huh.
Or mind emotions.
Right.
And there can be that, I mean, just say in this example, that intensity of anger. And then when we, I mean, in this case, like, you know, we set ourselves in a very, I don't know if we should say loving container, but that energy of Reiki, yeah?
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, it's like the mind has the capacity to move toward love, or, you know, toward that feeling of compassion for this young man.
Mm-hmm. And
I think that's part of what also going through that experience together, you know, it also brings us closer together.
Yes.
And, you know, there's something, I was just thinking about this morning, not on this topic, but there's something about seeing and expressing our real vulnerability in the moment, which, I mean, like, sometimes is not maybe our greatest, our most, I don't know, positive or kind or whatever state of being. I mean, it can be, like, one of our kind of worst. But when we show it, it almost seems like that, you know, like that opens love also. Do you know what I mean? I'm not being so articulate.
I think I know what you mean. It would be great to be more clear, so let me think. Can you say it again?
Yeah. I think when we can show what is really the truth of where we are. And that can be a painful place, an angry place, an anxious place. That in itself seems to open the door to love and compassion. The vulnerability, if we can stand in it.
Yes.
Which I think just comes from showing it, you know? I mean, when we show it, we're standing in it. And that brings us relief.
Yes,
and
it does.
And the capacity to move.
Well, it's interesting to think about this because, in a few days' hindsight, because for me, it was interesting to see how, or to feel myself be touched by all the different responses that there were, and that I think I didn't really connect with what had happened until this morning. And I think that I was just operating in this sort of another world, you know, out at the ranch, and being in this, you know, this Reiki group. And this morning I woke up and I felt great, and then I went out, and the first thing I saw at the car dealer was this the television the news, and they were talking about the, you know, minute of silence for Gabrielle Giffords. And after that, I just felt weird. And I finally went to bed with a hot water bottle, if you can imagine, in Arizona, and slept for a while and got up. And then I was just intensely sad. And I feel that somehow that, you know, that vulnerability that I had, and the, you know, sort of equanimity of the situation, and that space left, and, you know, here I was in my own singular space of Reiki, and feeling like I'm very sad, and that was good, I feel. Really interesting. But a fascinating study of compassion and love, and in that, I really don't like the words that are used, like horrific, and I mean it was on some level, but there are these kind of provocative words that I feel are used in our press and in the TV, television announcers and so on. They have this kind of list of provocative words, and I feel like that's not. That's another really interesting aspect of this part about compassion. Like, do they engender or support compassion, or do they support separation? And
Right.
I always come back to they're supporting separation, so I'd like to somehow do something about that.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like, you know, that was a part of what I felt with that email that I was, you know, looking at yesterday, is that blaming or, you know, and pointing the finger at this person or that person,
mm-hmm.
or this act or that act,
mm-hmm.
is not going to move us toward a greater capacity to talk to each other,
mm-hmm.
which seems like in our country right now so critical,
mm-hmm.
that we really make an effort to talk to one another,
mm-hmm.
and not polarize.
Mm-hmm.
More.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah.
So, I suppose that in each of our own families or in our local circle, maybe even of Reiki students, there are situations in our lives where polarization is just happening. And, you know, we find ourselves experiencing the duality of good and bad and right and wrong. Which is one thing that Reiki has taught me actually doesn't exist. It only exists in my own subjective beingness, because it allows me to protect myself one more and keep the separation. So I'm definitely not like, you know, that person over there who I don't ever want to be like.
Yeah.
But probably am quite a lot like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or I wouldn't be feeling that way.
Right. The great dilemma of our time. So I'm just wondering, do you have any words of wisdom for this particular thing? Like, how can we, in our everyday life, step out of this kind of dual place? Like, step out of this polarization kind of thing?
Making somebody else the bad guy.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Or
how do we do that,
whatever.
Do you think? Do you have any great experiences or ideas?
Well, you know, it's certainly an important facet of my own spiritual practice to really work at trying to catch myself when I start doing that. And I think, I mean, it wouldn't be a big deal if it weren't a constant, chronic little deal. So this is one of the things that impresses me when I look at my own self, is just how often those kinds of feelings, I say sneak in, and that's not even quite the right thing. I think they're the backdrop.
Uh-huh.
So it's how often do I notice that I'm doing it?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, and it just covers the gamut, right? Little thoughts of, you know, maybe, I hate to use these words about myself, envy that somebody, you know, got something or other that I didn't.
Uh-huh.
Some puny little bit of attention. I mean, you know, we're talking petty things, but that somehow they got some attention I didn't get,
mm-hmm.
or the feeling that, you know, I'm better than somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I am so struck by how much of this kind of thing is really in me. So I think that is actually one of the first steps, is to do our best to pay attention to what's going on, what's the underlying kind of monologue, you know, that gets expressed that maybe I'm not even noticing.
Uh-huh.
Because if that's not there, I don't think it's there on a big scale.
Uh-huh.
the big scale exists because this is just, you know, who I, if I say who I am, I mean, I'm more than that, but that those thoughts are there. So that, to me, seems like the big challenge, is to be willing to watch and own up to it.
So when we do, for instance, daily Reiki treatments, it's a way to put us into a space, perhaps, of more equanimity, so that we feel more balanced and we don't feel like we have to go, you know, out on the edge and say, okay, they're better than I am, or they got more than I did, or whatever.
I think so. I mean, I think that daily Reiki treatment is really compassion for ourselves. And that it can, I mean, I know it moves me when I treat myself in the morning. And I mean, for example, sometimes I wake up, I feel anxious or worried. And I think I notice it more as I age. Maybe before there was more vitality that overcame it. I don't know.
That's my theory.
That's what I think.
I do. You know? I think that's true.
And so in a way, I mean, this is a little bit of an aside, but in a way, I think with age, we get to see a little bit more of the truth of who's there. So, given that I wake up sometimes anxious or worried, you know, when I treat myself, I am frequently moved to that place of peace and connection. And I really do feel that then when I'm, you know, aware of myself in that space, it does soften the worry, the anxiousness, the irritation, and puts me more in a frame of mind that as those things pop up in the day, I have more capacity to move myself back to to a more positive frame of mind, or a more loving frame of mind, or and I'm not so tight, you know, about my own small stuff. So I think self-treatment is, you know, it's an incredible blessing. In this regard.
Well, I was just thinking when you were sharing this, that last year and up until a few months ago, I was receiving a lot of distant Reiki, and then I was also having a lot of hands-on Reiki, like 4 times a week at least. And now that I'm kind of moving out of that experience and into a more regular, I don't know about what regular is, but a more regular schedule of Reiki treatments, like I had, you know, Reiki, 2 or 3 Reiki treatments this weekend, but, you know, usually I'd be getting like 1 Reiki treatment besides my self-treatment a week, and then I know that, you know, many of the people who are treating me are not doing it as frequently, or, you know, they have other priorities, which is totally fine. But I see that I was, when I felt like I was kind of floating on this cloud of Reiki, it was really easy to remain in this kind of mellow space, we would call it. And now it's giving me the opportunity to make conscious decisions about that. Do I stay in that space, and can I do it from a conscious decision rather than from relying on Reiki. So I know this sounds kind of strange, but...
No, this doesn't sound strange to me at all.
Really?
I totally hear you.
Because I just feel like there's a part where Reiki gives me the opportunity to have the experience of mm-hmm. what it would feel like, and then with, you know, a reasonable, I would say, or, you know, not a critical kind of care, I can move into my everyday world and say, well, what is the frequency of Reiki treatments that I need to maintain that space? And maybe it's more than once a week.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think, great, where's my Reiki practitioners that I can call up and make an appointment with twice a week or something so that I get my fix? And I'm able to be more in the compassionate space rather than in a polarized space.
Yeah.
So what did
it's
you...
It's an interesting question, and I have different thoughts about it.
Oh,
I
yeah,
have
like what?
Varied thoughts about it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, so one is just what you're saying. So what's the amount of Reiki I need in order to maintain greater love and compassion, if
uh-huh.
you want to put it that way,
right.
you know, or just bottom line, you know, be kinder.
Right.
And then this question also comes up for me of, and how do I increase my capacity for love and kindness and compassion? I don't know exactly how I want to say this, but like without turning just to Reiki to give me that, you know, it's an interesting little edge.
Uh-huh.
That on the one side, I need both.
Uh-huh.
I need to increase my own ability. And I also need the support.
Uh-huh. Which is, of course, exactly why, I assume, the Buddhist way of being really emphasizes community.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Because to be in a supportive environment...
Mm-hmm.
Where other people are also, you know, sort of working on the same thing, so to speak, and
yes.
being
yeah.
in the same space, there is some true support and understanding there, just like what I experienced on the weekend. And even though each of us had our different ups and downs about the situation,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
No matter what, it was this feeling of Reiki and this feeling of understanding that we all shared. So even though we weren't crying or being angry or whatever, it didn't mean that we weren't concerned or empathetic or compassionate for the people who were involved.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really good to know that
yeah.
we could just be ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that that there are... that unknown to us on some level, the importance of community in our Reiki practice is not spoken very much, but it certainly is very present for me.
Yeah, I think that's really true.
And I don't know how, can you talk a little bit about your experience of community in the Buddhist practice? You know, the role of community?
Right. Well, I would say it's very much like you were describing, that, you know, people are have common values and perspectives.
Uh-huh.
And then there's that support to, in the aspiration to develop those capacities. Really, I think, you know, very much the same things we've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
of developing love and compassion, of becoming aware of what does go on in the white noise of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that desire to want to address that and let some of those negative ways of thinking, feeling, and acting go. And to, when you do that with other people, I mean, for example, say on retreat, you know, that's a really focused environment for that kind of work, that it really is supportive.
Uh-huh.
And like any kind of community, this recognition that you're not alone, that the struggles you have are the same struggles other people have.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of us tend to feel, at least sometimes, that somehow I'm the only one who feels this. I'm the only one who does that. So it always seems kind of universally helpful from my perspective to realize that, no, I am not the only person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the only person who struggles with this. I'm not the only person who does that. I'm not the only person who keeps doing that.
Uh-huh.
You know, those kinds of things.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so now I have another question that comes to mind. Is this not meant to be provocative, but it might be?
Uh-huh.
And that is, so do you, have you noticed an improvement in your in your levels of compassion over the last few years? And how can you tell?
Yes, I'm going to say I do notice change.
Uh-huh.
I would also have to say that I notice subtler levels of also the kind of not-so-positive thoughts. Like I find, oh, it's more pervasive than I realized. So I would say both. And I think one of the things that I has changed for me is the piece around motivation, that my desire or my desire to really be more caring of other people is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the more heartfelt and sort of, you know, deeply held that desire is, you know, it makes it stronger. That seems probably rather trite, but I feel that.
Uh-huh. So this is how I heard it. And you can tell me if I'm off the beaten track.
Sure.
In given my own case, I think that I had these big pieces of anger and through therapy and lots of Reiki and living with the precepts and living with a group of people who really were willing to support me in many different ways to break through these islands of anger, we can say, they have almost disappeared off my radar, like out of my daily life.
Uh-huh.
They do come up, but when I'm tired, when I... when I'm tired, when I'm upset, when I'm don't have enough time, all these, you know, when all these things come together, that's when it comes up again.
Uh-huh.
But for the basically, it's, you know, kind of left my life, these big pieces.
Uh-huh.
But what happens is it just uncovers smaller ones and
yeah.
smaller ones and smaller ones until... You know, you always think, okay, I've done that now, I'm really good, you know, and I don't go into my rages only once every 4 months or something. So this is really good. And then I think, oh, but what about all this other stuff, you know? Is
yeah.
that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, it's kind of disheartening. It's like once I feel like I have one of the Reiki precepts down, then, you know, a few months later it comes up again in a different way. And I think, but I already handled that one. But I have to realize this is not a checklist for good behavior.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I really could say
what?
That I consider very positive is that I think this is true. I mean, well, I'll just say it and then I'll clarify it. I have no defense for my anger.
Uh-huh. Great.
Now, of course, the really sneaky little ones that slide in there, if I think about it, I know I have no defense. In the moment I feel it, I can feel there is still a defense. Otherwise, it wouldn't even be there.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But once it gets up there where the radar detected, I know it. I cannot defend it.
Uh-huh.
And that I feel really good about.
Uh-huh. And do you feel that then, because these are smaller, less, they're more shallow-rooted, that there's a way to make conscious choices about these that are immediately effective rather than something that feels so big, like a mountain, that is very difficult to move. So is that true for you about these little daily things? Or do you just despair at how many there are?
I definitely don't despair.
Well, that's good.
So that part is good. I do have the suspicion that there are still more of them than I realize.
Oh, yeah.
I can move off of them often, pretty easily. And yet, there was something you said that, and yet I feel they are still very pervasive. So, yeah, complex.
Very.
And you know what I think? I mean, going kind of along the lines of the big things wouldn't happen if the little things weren't there. So the other thing that kind of gives me pause for thought is that because all these little ones are there, I'm not triggered in my normal day-to-day life by anything big, you know? But I also could imagine if the circumstances were different that there could be a big flare, not just these little flares. So I guess that's just a cause for humility.
Well, I feel that there is this interesting new age thought that I always used to wonder what it was about, and that is, you know, I want to be able to be more conscious. This was a big phrase, and I never knew really what this meant. And now what I realize is that consciousness has to do with being able to choose my state of mind or choose my state of being, and really actually make that effective. Not in the sense of, nailing myself to the wall, so to speak, but to really just stop myself in mid-sentence and go, well, wait a minute, is what I really want to do alienate this person that I love? Or, you know, what am I really saying? And then to be able to immediately turn that around. I think that's the point of true consciousness, is to be able to stop and turn it around and transform that immediately into something else. And that's a huge practice for me.
Yes, and I agree.
And it requires a great amount of compassion.
Yeah.
For myself.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. Compassion begins at home.
Exactly. That's wonderful last words of wisdom.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, Susan, for our conversation. It's been really wonderful, and it has left me with some really good places to ponder, to think about, and to take action in my own life. That's great.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Phyllis. The same is really true for me.
Oh, great. Wonderful. And for you listeners, if you're on the Facebook and or want to be on the Facebook, just look on the e-card and you'll find a little button, and you can go to our Facebook page and you can share your thoughts and your experiences of coming to compassion. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.